Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you have not been fired. You've made the playoff push. How's it going?
Well, hope so. Cross my fingers.
Well, we had they're unconfirmed reports.
Unconfirmed reports. I'm tired, man. This is a long night doing all that playoff crap last night.
It really sneaks up on you.
Every year I'm like, oh, it'll be fine. Like, we'll have all this stuff done and we'll plan and therefore things won't be stressful and it'll be okay and I'll get some rest for the 2 days before the playoffs. And like, that never happens.
I found it kind of funny that there was all this build up to, are the Lakers going to make the playoffs? Are the Lakers going to make the playoffs? And then, like, not only they make the playoffs, they end up as a seventh seed, which just makes the whole thing, like, seem kind of silly.
Like the Utah Jazz just, like, completely fall on their face and get run over by the Grizzlies. And
right.
It's like, oh, that's kind of disappointing. Like,
right.
Actually mean that much. And then, yeah, they're the seventh seed. I mean, really. Disappointing end by the Rockets, really. Like, I think they could have made a run if they'd gotten a different seed. Now I think they're going to get destroyed. But we'll get to that tomorrow.
Yeah.
For now,
let's talk about some firings.
Let's talk about people losing their jobs, because that's funny.
It's weird. Well, there was a thing today, like, we have our predictions for the first roundup, and some Nuggets fan didn't like that Ken Berger predicted the Warriors to upset the Nuggets, and he said he needed to be fired. And then it made me think of, like, the coach's firings. I was like, he thinks differently about this series, and that means he should lose his job and not be able to, like, pay for things for his kids, and, like, that's what you think. That it's kind of weird how we root for people to lose their jobs.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand from a fandom standpoint, these guys are responsible for something that you put a lot of emotional investment in, and it's part of it, and
sure.
I get that, and, like, you know, and also I think all of us are kind of like, if you're incompetent, you shouldn't have your job except in very specific circumstances, but at the same time, we completely lose track of, like, how much it would suck. I mean,
yeah,
the money makes it easier because it's guaranteed. Like, I think about that a lot where I'm like, well, if I had a 4-year contract and I knew I was going to get paid anyway,
sure,
it would take some of the sting off. But it's still just like, from a personal standpoint, you're just like, oh, God, I don't have a job. Like, I wasn't good enough at my job to not get fired.
If I had a 7-year or a 7-figure guaranteed contract for the next 2 years and someone's like, we're going to pay you not to do this, I wouldn't even go job hunting. People are like, oh, are you looking for a new job? Nope. Just hanging out. What would you do if
watching sci-fi movies?
What would you do if you had $1 million? I'd do nothing. I would just sit around and do nothing.
I would eat burritos and bed. That's what I would do every day.
Do you disagree with any of the firings? Doug Collins out in Philly, Byron Scott's out in Cleveland, Lawrence Frank is out in Detroit.
Doug, I just feel I'm just glad for because I think it's the right decision by him.
It needed to happen for both sides, I think.
Yeah, and to be fair, they're of course classifying it as a mutual decision. And
sure.
Doug decided to step down, and then they asked him not to, and yada yada yada. I think for me, the last time that I saw Collins when he was in Denver, I left thinking that is one man in the world that needs a long stay on a beach with little drinks with umbrellas in it more than any person I have seen in quite a while.
That guy could, just use like 3 months in Tahiti on the beach.
Yep.
Just hanging out, and then come back to, like, the broadcasting booth.
Like, beautiful wait staff, nice saunas,
yes.
Comfortable sheets, like, the whole 9 yards. And trust me, I know what that looks like, because I'm pretty much there 9 months out of the year. Doug was just really stressed out this season, and, I mean, the whole season was really disappointing. This is one where, if I'm, like, the GM, I'm, like, trading everyone, not based on their talent, just we have to completely start over.
Yeah, it's gotta all go. Yeah.
Like, it's like burn your clothes bad.
The Byron Scott one's interesting to me because he's not a guy I think is a great coach, but I also don't think he's a bad coach. And they gave him not a lot to work with in Cleveland. And then he had injuries on top of that and couldn't win. And they're like, oh, we want to go in a different direction. And it makes me wonder, is it simply because they're still, like, one of the worst defensive teams in the league? Is it that they didn't show a lot of progress? But how can you show progress if you're given little talent and then what little talent you have gets hurt all the time?
It was really – I thought this firing was crap. I don't have any problem with, next year, we really put – we put together a team for a run,
right,
and it didn't work out. And, you know, it's just clear that this isn't working and we just need to move on. That wasn't this year. Like – and this is my problem going into the season. As I said, if you look at the way the roster is built, it hinges upon different – every roster hinges upon questions. Like, the Heat hinge on, does LeBron exist? Has he not been removed from corporate reality?
Right.
then they're going to be good. And with the Cavs, it was, well, okay, if Kyrie's healthy and he's able to play well, and Varejao's healthy and he's able to play well, and then if Dion Waiters turns into Dwayne Wade 2.0, this team could really be good, because other than that, it's crap.
Right.
And then Kyrie got hurt and Anders got hurt and Waiters was crap for 2 months of the season. And they had a decent 2.5 months. Not bad. Pretty good. Pretty good. I'll give him pretty good, which is more than a lot of players get. But that's not good enough, especially with the rest of it. Now, one exception is, by the way, Tristan Thompson played great this year.
Yeah, and that's where my thinking goes, is Kyrie credits Byron Scott for developing him. And Tristan Thompson has clearly shown development in his 2 years. It looks like some things are progressing.
I do wonder, there was lots of talk about the locker room being unhappy, and then like those things came out, and then the players like really went far to refute them, so I don't know what's going on. You have to be in the locker room.
Right.
It's complicated, because not only do you have to be in the locker room, but you have to be in the locker room, but usually you can't talk about it if you know those things.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard a lot of stories from writers about situations that are going on, but they can't write about it because the players are like, I'm not saying that on record.
Right.
And then you're stuck because you're like, well, I know they hate him, but I can't write that they hate him because no one will give me permission to write that they hate him.
Right.
So you have to kind of hint at it. But I don't know if that's the case or not, because, I mean, Irving was very emotional today in defending him and saying how upset he was. And I just keep coming back to Grant is kind of like David Kahn to me in some ways, in that not from the what's the word I'm looking for?
Smarmy?
Yeah.
Repulsive?
Well, not for the smarminess, definitely. And not even from the abject failure in some regards, but that he does things where you go and you go, oh, that was a really good move. You got these assets. Like, you got a lot of opportunity here to do something really good. And then what he does with those things, you're kind of like, oh.
Right.
Like, he cleared space. Like, he got rid of all this cap room. And he had all this room to move. And then he was smart enough to not necessarily go overboard. But then the decisions that he made were so questionable. Like, they could have gone out and gotten some valuable veterans to help this team just to be a little bit better. Just a little bit better. And they didn't. And then they kind of re-signed. I don't know. I didn't like the way that the roster's been managed very much. And to me, the big problem with the Cavs is the way the roster is developed, not the way that they play. Because the other thing is, look, the Cavs kept sneaking up on teams and making games close when they should be blowouts.
Absolutely.
This wasn't the Suns. Like, they were in games, and to me, this is a lie. If you're able to get your guys to compete, that's a huge thing in the NBA when you got a losing team. That's the only way you build a winning culture.
And I think that I wonder if they played the roster too safely, if that makes sense. Like, they were trying to be smart about it and trying to, you know, let's cut salary. We only bring on salary if we're getting a first round pick in return, and, you know, we're going to stockpile these picks, we're going to use them and build with young players, and then we'll figure something out for there. But can you be too safe with that? I mean, Daryl Morey was almost too safe with that kind of stuff for a while. It eventually cashed in, but I almost wonder if you can kind of bide your time for too long.
I mean, I can't look at a whole lot of guys that they could have grabbed aside Drummond, who I advocated to be like a 15th pick last year, that they could have really gotten, where I'd be like, oh, they really should have gotten this guy. It's hard to nail down the guy in that draft. I think this draft's important. Like, they need to hit. They need to hit, and they need to hit strong.
Which is funny, because people think this is a very weak draft. And we always think that, but I think there are a lot of really good rotation players, not a lot of, like, potential all-stars, but you really can't – maybe those are the drafts that are more important to hit on, is where you don't waste a pick and not end up with a rotation guy.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's kind of the damage here. Is like, I think everything is kind of downgraded, where it's – I don't think this is like a – I am one of the guys that thinks this is a horrible draft, but I say it from the perspective of everything is downgraded, not all of these players are going to be out of the league in 2 years. Like, no. Like, there are lots of guys that are going to be really good guys that I'm like, you know who's really good? That guy. Like, or that guy's having a really good year. Like, there's going to be lots of those guys. It's NBA-level talent. That's what happens. It's just that you look to the draft for, first, you're looking for guys that are going to change your franchise, and there's very few of those. And then you're looking for really stable, really high-quality guys that you can really be like, oh, I think he's going to be really great, and it's hard to identify much of those, and it kind of slides down from there. And so that I think the risk of missing completely is higher, so they need to nail it, which is interesting because they're in the same place I think the Hornets are. Like, both the Hornets and Cavaliers need to hit on this draft.
Oh, they are no longer Hornets, my friend. They are Pelicans.
Oh, God.
They are officially Pellies.
Pelly can't deal with this. And I think that And so I think that they're in the kind of same place there. The Lawrence Frank firing, he sucks in the beginning of like the first 2 months of the season. That's just what happens.
Yeah, and I actually really like him as a coach, but I don't think it fits that team. At least not with the construct they have where they're in a rebuilding mode, because he's not crazy about playing, you know, young guys. He trusts veterans, which in certain situations works, but not when you're, or at least not to the degree that he did it when you're trying to rebuild. I get the thought process behind it, and I agree with it a lot of the time, but it's hard to rebuild without playing the young guys.
Why do teams hire coaches that win with veteran talent to coach developing rosters?
That's a good question. It makes me think, like, is Flip Saunders going to get another gig in the NBA if it means, like, he has to develop talent? Because when he was given two, well, I guess he developed talent technically early on with Minnesota, but then the game evolved and the league evolved, and it's like, It didn't really pass him by, but it definitely caught up to his gimmicks. And then in Detroit, he was given a really great team and had success, but didn't have championship success. And then he went to Washington, where he was supposed to develop under the new NBA, and it was a disaster. And I wonder if maybe there are guys that just have to be given good veteran teams.
You know, I think that there are teams that are in that position. Like, oftentimes, teams that are winning but aren't taking that next step need a new guy to take them to a higher level. You know, like, I just think that there's lots of guys in that kind of area. Like, I mean, I think P.J. Arcolesimo has done a really great job with Brooklyn. But if you ask me, like, do I think Byron Scott would probably be a better coach next season for the Nets than P.J. Arcolesimo? I'm tempted to say yeah.
Yeah,
because I've seen what he can do with veterans.
That kind of makes sense. I think I agree with that.
You know, and on the flip side, these guys that you would think would do, the guys like Brian Shaw that really like help players and work with them intensely, and that's like player development, they can't seem to get gigs.
Right.
And that's weird to me. Like, you know, and Mike Malone, I think, is another one of those guys. So I think it's going to be interesting to see who winds up coming up, and that really needs to be a point of emphasis, because the temptation, and Chris Grant's already talking about, they want to bring in an established coach because they're desperate to get the city to not bail on them. It's like the city's not going to bail on them. They have no option. Like,
right.
All other teams are miserable. Don't worry about it.
Right, exactly. Like, you're probably the most – I mean, you know, football, it can turn around so quickly. But the Cavs, like, they have a franchise center, or a franchise player with Kyrie Irving. It's easier to get the city behind someone like him who's so fun to watch and so good. So either – I mean, if you're going to bring in an established coach, then you need to start bringing in established players and not keep – saying, oh, we have all these draft picks. Like, that's not going to entice a coach of, hey, we have all these young guys for you to develop. Like, that's a lot of extra work. And not that coaches don't want to do that extra work, but it's just, it's a situation where you're asking them to not only revive a team, but to really, like, teach the team how to revive. And that's a lot to ask, and you maybe need to start selling off some of those picks for veterans and not worry that you're missing out on some young, great talent. Like, you have young, good players. Like, develop them, bring in veterans to help them develop, and have that coach to kind of oversee everything.
Yeah, and then, you know, if you get to that point and you're like, I don't feel like his X's and O's and management and everything, I don't think he has the experience to win the playoffs, that's fine. Then you can release him and come to terms with somebody else and bring in a guy that's got a lot of veteran experience and knows how to win those kind of games with those kind of teams and succeed. Because it's bizarre, because it's like Cleveland fires Byron Scott, and then Randy Whitman's probably may end up being still be there in Washington.
Right.
Where, like, the Wizards want to win right now. And it's like, well, if you want to win right now and you have this veteran roster, bring back Flip Saunders.
Right.
You know, or if, you know, that's not the, if you don't want to do that, then get rid of Whitman and bring in Scott or Frank, or what I would do is I'd fire Grunfeld and name SVG my czar.
Yeah.
Like, I'd name him Emperor Wizard. That's what I would name him. Like, well, not Emperor Wizard, because that's like a Ku Klux Klan reference. But
yeah, that was a little racial.
You're right, exactly. But, like, SVG gets to be, like, you know, the big dude there and just do whatever he wants. Like, have personnel control and coach the team. I'd be okay with that, because it's like, you haven't succeeded with any of your other models. Let's try too much power in a dictator's hands.
Right. Well, enough of this fun talk about people losing their jobs. Let's talk about the playoffs. Eastern Let's Conference. Talk about
playoff, man. We got 2 days to go. I'm pumped. You're pumped. We've got Eastern Conference playoff previews are up on CBSSports.com. Our picks are up on CBSSports.com. And we did something a little different than most sites do.
We showed how confident we are in our picks. Literally.
And you guys are men, and I am a scared little boy.
It was something where I was like thinking of the numbers. I'm like, am I sure? Yeah, how sure? I don't know. And I'm like 85 popped in my head. I was like, I think I'm 85% sure.
Well, and it was funny because I was looking at your picks, and I was like, and I actually was surprised that some of yours were lower. I was surprised that you were 60 on the Spurs and 60 on the Nuggets. Not surprised on 60 on the Nuggets. That was predictable. But I guess I expected you to be like 95% on all yours just because you're so competitive. I figured you'd be like, no, this is what's happening. Like, I'm telling you right now.
Well, we knew the Eastern Conference matchups a lot earlier than we did the Western Conference matchups. So I went in being pretty confident. And then the Western Conference matchups are tougher. And I started thinking, oh boy, I should start hedging on some of these.
So we'll talk about the East today. Tomorrow our Western Conference previews go up, and we'll talk about the Western Conference on this podcast tomorrow. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's get the Heat Bucks out of the way. Although the Bucks do play the Heat very well, they're 3-4 over the last 2 years against Miami, which is pretty good, especially for a team that's under 500 right now. This shouldn't really last more than five games. I mean, I have the Heat in five because I think that the way the Bucks play them, they're bound to steal one at home. But this is really, I think we'll get to continue to see how serious Miami is about this championship level of play they've found over the last year, and will they mess around with the Bucks or will they get rid of them early and try to end the series right away and get a little rest before things get a lot tougher.
I was thinking about the last 2 years, and I thought about how Miami played versus New York last year, and then I was actually thinking a lot about how they played with a much worse team in Miami in 2011 versus the Sixers. And yeah. I was thinking, that Sixers team and that Knicks team, how do they compare to the Bucks? And I've watched the Bucks the entire year. I've probably watched more Bucks games than most people outside of Milwaukee. I really enjoy watching that team because I like guys that are long and athletic. I like guards that are like Monta Ellis, even though everything that comes with Monte have it all. I like those brief moments where Brandon Jennings plays like he has some, like he doesn't have self-awareness. That's my problem with Brandon, I think, is that he's too self-aware that he wants to be a star.
He's a guy that when he's on, he's so fun because the shot's falling. He's not afraid to shoot it. And I still think it's kind of hypocritical, but he's a guy who has trouble with shot selection and yet is so good at managing a game. And it confounds me almost every time I see him play.
And I honestly am excited for him in like 5 years. I think in 5 years it's going to be really exciting to see where he's at. He's still really young.
Yeah.
But all that said, you know, they've got too many weaknesses. They've got too many. Their good guys are too young to have the experience to compete. Their veterans make too many poor decisions to be able to know how to combat this. They need Monte Ellis to have the series we've all dreamed about, and I just don't believe it'll happen. I just don't think he'll ever play within himself or be able to rise up and have one of those mellow type, you know, series to be able to do anything to compete. Because on the other hand, I mean, look at what the Heat are throwing at him. Look at all the matches. I mean, you can talk all you want about Wade's defense. That guy can still lock up pretty well when he wants to, especially against a guy that was predictable. They can play Wade straight up without really having to bring much help over on Monte. They don't have to stick any of their elite defenders on him. That's really interesting. Now, Ellis has the edge on him in terms of speed, but they're going to have help defense there. I don't see any reason why the Heat can't play small, because I think Battier can. They can run out that lineup they do with Battier at the four because he can guard Ilyasova.
Yeah.
You know, and then they've got – it's not that they've got no answer for LeBron, because I really hate when people say that, because it's like, who's got an answer for LeBron? But the big scary part here is LeBron doesn't have to focus on anybody. He can play free safety.
That's the fun thing, I think, is that you're going to – and with Wade, he isn't consistent on defense enough for – what you want him to be, but he still is very opportunistic defensively. And that's what gets those quick strikes, those 8-0, 10-0 skirmishes that they do. And when the flying death machine is in full motion, and that's going to be really hard for Milwaukee to stop, and I don't think anybody expects them to stop, and maybe we're giving too much analysis to a series that should be over relatively quickly, but it's not even a matter of do the Bucks have enough experience. It's just Miami has too much talent, and they know how to use the talent.
I tend to do this too much, where I really like matchups in the NBA. Just thinking about it conceptually is maybe my favorite part about it. Like, I just really like that part of X player versus X player, and if X player plays Y position versus the other team versus Z team, how does it change? But I've learned after now, you know, I've been doing this for a while now, like you have, you just have to sometimes be like, the other team is just a lot better.
Yeah.
Just a better team, and that's pretty obvious.
Yeah,
I mean, you're just a lot better.
And I think, and that's the case. Do you have the Bucks winning a game, or are you saying the sweep?
I said 80% for a sweep.
Okay.
I just don't. Part of me is just thinking that I just feel like they're going to win the first two in Miami, and they're going to look awesome. And then Milwaukee's going to make a run in game three, but then the Heat are going to give them one of those absolute just crushing losses, and it's going to break their back into a million pieces, and then game four they're not going to be up for, and Miami walks.
I could definitely see that happening. I've got the Heat in five. I think Bucks will steal one, like I said, but I'm pretty confident. I think the Bucks have a good chance to really take a game.
I'm actually very impressed with the fact that you're picking them for a game, because it's, you know, that just for, and I agree with your analysis in our previews in terms of the Bucks do play this team well. They just have historically.
Yeah.
They just do.
It's almost like they have no idea they're not supposed to be in these games. Like
interestingly,
they're too
the
naive.
One guy that's done really well in this and when playing them consistently. Luke Richard and Mbamute.
Yeah.
He has great plus-minus numbers. He does pretty well. It makes a little bit of sense just because you're like, oh, well, he's like the big versatile guy that can do a lot, but he also can't shoot, so you kind of wonder, like, where are they going to get points from?
And the one game that the Bucks did win this year, Larry Sanders went nuts. He dominated on offense. He dominated on defense. He dominated the boards. He was incredible, and that's kind of what you have to do, and it's a defeating feeling, I'm sure, but you just have to pack the paint, stop them from getting attempts at the rim, and hope they miss jumpers.
So let's talk about the big one. The 3 o'clock opening weekend game, game one in Madison Square Garden, the Boston Celtics versus the New York Knicks, classic. I mean, there's just really so much classic about this matchup.
It's going to be the least fun series to read coverage about. But maybe one of the more...
You're really annoyed with the narratives on this one.
It's not that... I just... It's the fact that these... And they have very good media personalities covering them. Like, the Knicks... The people that cover the Knicks are great. The people that cover the Celtics are great. But when certain members of those societies get into, like, these pissing contests, I don't understand why. And I know it's an East Coast thing, and it's a New York versus Boston thing, and it's something I just don't get, because I'm not from there, and I've never lived there, but I just think, like, if the Celtics beat the Knicks, that doesn't make Boston media better, and if the Knicks beat the Celtics, that doesn't make New York media better. So I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. That I would prefer. I don't know. I'll tell you. I'm looking forward. I want there to be another Cheerios incident. Like, I want KG and Melo to get into it. I want Pierce to be doing the kisses to the crowd in New York. I want the full thing. I don't think it's going to happen, but I really want this to be a compelling series.
I think it will be. I mean, I've got the Knicks in seven. I really think it'll go seven. And I think the Boston's good enough to stay in it, but I think the Knicks are too good to lose the series.
You know, here's my thinking. This is. My thought process, I'm actually correcting something on our picks right now because our devoted producer, Sergio Gonzalez, who does a wonderful job, screwed this up and put me down for six games when, in fact, I did five.
Great job, Sergio.
Good job, Serge. But what I was going to say is this is my thought process for picking the Knicks in five. I had to kind of do a process of elimination. I was like, all right, what's my instinct? And I was like, well, my instinct is Knicks in six because that's Knicks win two, Boston wins two, the Knicks close out. Right? Right. And then I was like, well, hold on. If Boston wins two in Boston, what's their reaction going to be mentally? If Boston wins two in Boston, then they're going to be thinking, we can do this.
Yeah.
We can do this. This team is weak. They are not as good as they think they are. We have the mental edge. F these guys. expletive these guys, expletive their mothers, expletive everything. Let's go get them. And then they lose game, you know, five close in New York, come back and in Boston, all that motion, all that energy. Rajon Rondo's there. They force game seven. And I was like, do I think that the series goes seven games? No, because New York is much better. So if it can't go seven games, then Boston can't win two in Boston.
Right.
And in which case, that means that the Knicks are going to win the first three of four. And I don't believe that the Celtics are good enough to win a game five elimination game in New York.
Here's my thought process there is, I just know that the Celtics are going to be better than we expect, because they always are. And it's really annoying. Like, there's no other way to put it. It's just annoying that, you know, they're not a title contender, but they're going to be more competitive than they probably should be, if that makes any sense. And I just know that it's going to be, you know, Jeff Green's going to continue to rewrite narratives, and Paul Pierce is going to be the captain, whatever that means. He's going to steer the ship or run it into an iceberg.
Hashtag Celtic pride.
Right, yeah, hashtag Celtic pride and all that stuff. One matchup I'm really looking forward to is Avery Bradley against Raymond Felton, because Bradley is such a pest, and Felton really seems offended when a point guard picks him up full court.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, seriously, one, you're not going to take the ball from me, and two, now I have to work harder. And he just seems like...
Do it. That's the best part.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, he seems so, like, just offended that someone would pick him up full court. And it's like, I don't know if you've watched yourself recently, but it seems like a good strategy.
Are you aware this is actually very successful, Raymond? I'm really excited. I really am genuinely excited about Avery Bradley and Courtney Lee, as if Doc starts them in game one. I feel like, If you tell Courtney Lee, because Courtney Lee's a pretty coachable guy.
Yeah.
If you tell Courtney Lee, here's what I need you to do. All I need you to do is make sure Kid doesn't make the rotation pass. That's all you got to do. Don't let Kid hurt us. Like, stay within our schemes, do your job, but make sure Kid does not hurt us with that extra rotation. I feel like you've got a really good chance of disrupting New York, and when you disrupt New York, that ball movement that you wrote about kind of goes away, and then they're into, I'm trying to create ISOs with help defenders coming over to creep over and help. Like, that to me seems like a situation where there could be an opportunity for Boston to disrupt New York a little bit. And I think from there it turns into a really interesting question, because the Knicks haven't been great defensively. Can they get to a level to where, even against a Boston offense that is ugly, can they get their defense to a level to control these games, or are these going to get wild and intense?
Yeah, I am interested to see, because Boston has such good perimeter defenders, I do wonder if they can disrupt that ball movement. And if they do, that's when I think Boston makes it a series, because that ball movement's not going to be great all series long. I just don't think it is. And when that breaks down, how does Carmelo react? How does J.R. Smith react? How does Raymond Felton react? Raymond Felton actually might be the bigger problem of the three of them when the ball movement breaks down, because he thinks he's a one-on-one guy. He takes a lot of shots, and that could be a much bigger problem.
Which is why I would, you know, they're not going to do this, and it makes me crazy. Run the Felton, or even kids at really – I've been watching some. Kid can run this very well still, even his age. Run the freaking Chandler point guard pick and roll. Run the 1-5 pick and roll.
Oh.
Just run it. Like, you don't have to end it there, but if you run it, then their corner guys are going to suck in, which means Melo's going to have more space on the catch.
Yep.
And once Melo's got space in the triple threat, you're screwed, because then you're trying to recover on the deadliest player in triple threat.
And a guy that is willing to pass now.
Yeah. Like, don't. You know, just run that, and you're going to have a lot of really good opportunities. It's when they start getting into Melo, when Melo brings that ball up the court, I'm like, oh God, like, here we go again, you know, and pound that ball. I mean, I think it's okay for New York to play. They don't want to play fast. Like, you surprisingly don't want to play a fast game versus Boston. You want to control the pace and make them work. But I think it's, you know, they can play their game, just run a few sets with a pick and roll to force them to get a little bit out of their sets and not just work into it. If you're Boston, who do you start in the series? What's your five?
I think that I would go Lee, Bradley, Pierce. I think I'd start Jeff Green and then KG.
I was wondering. Do you tell Jeff Green go get Kmart, keep him off the glass?
That's a big
demand.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask. Yeah, I think you do. And Brandon Bass is probably going to play when Kmart's playing, so you don't really have to worry about Jeff Green having to do that. But I think if you're the lower seed, you have to make the higher seed adjust to you. And you have to make them think about what you're doing instead of trying to be comfortable in what they're doing. And starting Jeff Green might be able to accomplish that.
I think it's a really interesting question. I'm trying to think of it. Trying to debate that because I'm also looking at who they're going to start. If you're the Knicks, who do you start? What's your rotation there?
If you're the Knicks, you go Felton, Shumpert.
They've been playing Prigioni in a three-guard start.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. I actually wouldn't mind Felton, Kidd, Shumpert, Melo, Chandler, and then bring Prigioni and Novak and Kmart off the bench. Well, I'd play Copeland before Kmart.
Are you with me on I leave Jeff Green in isolation and just say, Jeff, he's going to score 40 points. That's okay. All I need you to do is make him work, and if we can shut down everybody else, we can win.
Yes, absolutely. I'm all for – in today's NBA, whether you're talking about defending Dwight Howard or Carmelo Anthony or whatever, I say you accept the fact that someone's going to take you on one-on-one or one-on-five essentially. And if they get 40, great. He lit up that defender. But as long as you shut down everybody else, you should be okay.
Yeah, you can't. What you can't have is have it be, he got 40 on 20 shots. That can't. If it's Melo got 40 on 20 shots, you're in real trouble.
Right.
So, it's gonna be fun though. Shumpert's an interesting kind of X factor too. I think just with his defense and the fact that he's a pretty good corner three shooter.
Yeah, he's shooting really well.
Tyson Chandler versus KG. I feel like that they won't get into it. This is what I actually kind of like about Tyson Chandler. Is he's always like, this is just a job. Stop.
Right. He doesn't take it too seriously.
He never gets into it. He's just like, no. This is just a job. I'm going home. I'm not involved in this with you.
I could see Pearson and JR getting into it.
Oh, yeah.
JR's on the court. Before KG gets into it with anybody, I could see Pearson and JR jawing at each other.
I'm thinking of this now. I'm kind of tempted to keep Avery out and then just only deploy Avery on JR.
I think you need Avery in there a lot. If Jason Terry was still an NBA player, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
But I went back and watched a bunch of what he's done trying to figure out if he could. He's just sucks. He sucks. I made a joke earlier. I said maybe he should get a tattoo of the second round to motivate him.
Do we see Shev like Randolph in this series?
Oh my god.
Man, look at some of the guys on this Boston bench. Shev like Randolph, Terrence Williams, and Jordan Crawford.
It's a ghost of lottery pass.
It's bad, man. I'm looking at some of these and I'm just this is really a concern. And also, looking down this list of guys, remember when Darko was on the Celtics?
That was months ago. That was this season. It's weird.
Remember when Darko was on the Celtics and people thought that he was going to be a big deal?
They thought he was... Oh, my God. Oh, you don't understand. That's Celtic culture. No, you don't understand. Darko is a big bag of suck.
That's the name of our podcast. The Eastern Conference Playoffs.
Big bag of suck.
Big bag of suck. This will be really fun, and I think we'll probably be talking a lot about this one as it goes on. Indiana versus the Hawks.
I really want to think this is a competitive series, but the more I look at it, I just think the Pacers will dominate.
Oh, 85. You got 85% five games for the Pacers.
Yeah, I just don't like the way Atlanta matches up with them. Yeah, you love matchups.
I matched up with them. I hate the fact that Indiana is just a much better team.
Yeah, you love matchups, and the NBA has become all about matchups, and I look at that, and I'm like, okay, David West can't stay with Josh Smith, so he's just going to back off of him, and now Josh Smith is shooting jumpers. Well, that's what you want.
Yeah.
And then you run cross screens, and you just go, Horford's a great defender, but you go after Horford with Hibbert, and you go after Horford with David West consistently, and you have Paul George flying in from the weak side, and I just think you can get Al Horford into foul trouble pretty easily, and I don't think Teague can stay with George Hill, and Lance Stephenson's good now. Like, there's just a lot of things that are not in Atlanta's favor. Atlanta's going to have to be really hot from three to make it work.
I started out and was like, oh, Pacers in five, and then I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, I think the Hawks can make a run at this. I'm seven, and I was like, no, the Hawks can't make a run at this. No. I took the wimp out and took the six games. That's like, for those of you listening, six games is like the safe. They won two games, they won the first two, and then kind of the rest of the series was what actually, like, who the better team was.
Yeah, if you're picking a team in six, I mean, that is a little inside basketball here. If you're picking a team in six, you're not crazy about the matchup.
Yeah, you're not. If you pick them in five, I feel very confident in this. If you pick them in four, you're basically like, I think the other team sucks.
Yeah. Example, in tomorrow's Western Conference preview, we will talk about my Denver in six pick, which I am not confident at all.
Hey, you are more confident in Denver than Ken Berger, who picked the Golden State Warriors in six games at 90%.
Yeah, I really wanted to pick the Warriors as an upset, but we could talk about that tomorrow. Let's talk Pacers.
Yeah, we'll talk about this tomorrow. I will say, like, there's a lot of I'm getting nervous just because there are a lot of people that are like, I am though noticing it's a lot of people that are really high on Gallo. That's one thing I'm tending to look at. That seems to be an indication to me that there's a lot of guys that a lot of people that are like that I know historically have been big on Gallo that are now like they don't have Gallo. And while I do like Gallo, I don't necessarily think that's going to be a huge impact in this series. But you know, like I said, I'm open to the possibility. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Tell me how Josh Smith has a big playoff series.
You know, I mean, it's not going to happen because the only way I can see it happening is if he's just like. If his agent flies to Indiana before game one, takes him out for a drink before he goes out later, sits him down and says, I can get you $15 million a year for 4 years for a good team. But you have, listen to me, you have to not shoot at all from beyond 10 feet. You have to go to the post every time. Everything has to be hustle and post-up stuff.
If he did that, if he did that, I would love him as a player.
Yeah, we all love him as a player. And if he did that combined with who he was 4 years ago when he was the Gerald Wallace Free Darko crossover stat-stuffing insanity machine,
right?
Where Smith was putting up lines like 19-9-7, like the LeBron lines we marvel at now, Smith used to put some of those up pretty regularly. You know, it wasn't like huge numbers, but sometimes it was like 19-9-4-3-3-2.
Yeah.
And he would be everywhere. And if he got back to being that, then great. But he's not gonna. He's gonna do the same damn thing that he does all the freaking time now, which is he's gonna get into triple threat and he's gonna stare at the guy. He's gonna think about it and then he's gonna shoot. He's gonna miss or he's gonna make the first one and think he should take five more. And it's gonna be really irritating. And it's gotten to be so irritating with me where I'm mad at Al Horford about it. That's how mad.
That seems irrational.
Because I'm just like, I want Al to finally be like, you know what, I don't care that you're older than me. Like, smack him and be like, no. Like, no, we're not doing this. I am tired of going home in the first round. Like, one of the things I do like, though, I like George Hill as a defender. I have a lot of faith in playoff Teague.
Yes, you do.
Like, I've seen him do damage to good teams, and I think the Teague is not great, but he's underrated just in terms of nobody really notices him. I think he's magically much better than what you estimate him at. I just think that he's capable. I have seen him step up regularly, so I'm excited about that. The only other chance I can think of is if Korver, Deshaun, and John Jenkins all of a sudden start throwing a party on the three-point line, that could be an impact. But
well, here's the thing is that the Pacers are the best team in the league at defending the three.
Yep.
They only gave up 32.7% from 3-point range.
Oh, I just remember the other reason I took him in six, though. The other reason I took him in six is this is the same team that lost to Orlando last year in the first game.
That's fair.
That's a big part of it, is Indiana has these random games where their offense is always bad, but sometimes it's so bad that they simply let one that just should not happen slip. It just happens. And so I'm just like, I could see that. I could see the Hawks winning one game because they play better than the opponent. Because from you know, obviously being a playoff team and being the sixth seed, the Hawks have won, have beaten the opponent by playing well.
Yeah, and so, I don't think this Hawks team is really that bad. I just don't like the matchup.
Right, and again, I think you are in the same place. Like if you replace Josh Smith with Paul Millsap,
actually, that's a great idea.
We're talking about something entirely different. Yeah. So. That one's interesting. Man, Bulls, Nets, I'm already starting to – I may break by tomorrow, man. I may switch to Bulls. I'm at 20% confidence in the 7-game win by the Nets right now.
I feel very, very confused about this series. I don't know what to think. I mean, part of it is not knowing if Rose is going to play, but I think you have to assume he won't. And I just – I don't know that I believe the Nets can take care of business at home. I have the Nets in seven, but I don't feel very confident about it. On the other side of that, I look and I think if Rose doesn't play, the Bulls are relying on Nate Robinson for 7 games.
And my thing is, if Rose doesn't play, who's the best player on the floor for either team?
Well, it's Darren Williams for the Nets.
Well, I think overall it's Darren. I like Joakim a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Darren's definitely a better player than Joakim.
Yeah. So that's where I get to is, and you know, I haven't. Nets fans have been surprised because they're used to me hating on everyone, and they've been like, "You haven't really talked about Darren." I was like, "I thought he wasn't playing well, and he wasn't playing well." I said he wasn't playing well, but I never really bagged on him because I was like, "Well, if he's hurt, he's hurt." Like I don't know. Like
yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that he had the weight issue, which they try and downplay, but was a thing. Like he put on some pounds
since the All-Star break.
Like
since the All-Star break, he's been really good, but
yeah.
I don't know that I mean, his ankles are apparently healthy, but he just hasn't shown consistency.
Yeah.
And that's what's keeping me from being pretty confident in the Nets.
And then it's like, well, okay, can Brooks step up and score on Joakim? Well, he can, but will he? Because Joakim knows how to freaking – no one knows how to ramp it up in the playoffs. He goes to a whole other level of psycho.
Well, and not only that, it's – they are so good in help defense, and Noah doesn't have to be perfect in post-up or in post-up defense, you know?
Yep.
Like, even with Carlos Boozer out there, he's a body to keep Reggie Evans off the boards. And then you have Jimmy Butler digging down. You have Luol Deng digging down. Like, you have plenty of guys to bother Brook Lopez, who's very good. I was all for his All-Star inclusion. He is, I don't know, probably the best low-post scorer in the league, right? And yet he's very slow in the things he does.
What role? I guess you put Luol on Joe, right?
Yeah.
Right, and so and then you put.
I think I'd go Luol on Gerald and Jimmy Butler on Joe.
Really?
I think I would. I think I'd give the kid a crack at him, and knowing that you can switch if it's not working.
But aren't you kind of wasting Luol then?
No, because I think that's where he helps against Brooke.
Oh, you allow Deng to freelance, and that way you can help wherever.
Yeah, he's helping against Brooke. He's helping against Darren. I think that's the way to go.
Taj Gibson versus Reggie Evans. How long is this going to be till a fight?
Halfway through the intros? They're just going to run at each other full speed and just collide.
I'm going to say third quarter game two is when it erupts.
And I mean, talk about defending Brooke. When Noah's on the court with Taj... Like that's a good double to throw at him.
And honestly, as much as we bag on him, who the hell's gonna guard Carlos Boozer in this series?
Yeah, that I mean.
See, now I'm talking myself into the walls.
Yes, but Nate Robinson, and I know Nate's been really good this year. I think he deserves six man consideration. If he won it, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be outraged at all. He's been that good, but God, is he unlikable.
I'm trying to.
Unlike a bull.
Because
he plays for the Bulls.
And then the part of me is also like, yeah, but the Clippers won a first round series last year on the back of Reggie Evans creating offense. Can the Bulls really not trust Nate Robinson more less than that? Like,
it's confused. This is a very confusing series.
This is a hard series, and I think both. It's interesting. The Bulls fans I'm encountering are kind of like, it's okay if you don't pick us. Like, we're not very good. It's okay. And the Nets fans, of course, are like, do you not understand how good we are?
Why won't you respect us?
They got really upset with me because I was like, why are the Hawks not aiming for Brooklyn? They got really upset at that idea. And I was like, the Pacers are like a really good team. You're fine, but the Pacers have one of the best defenses in the NBA, and you're not good at defense.
Right.
Like, you're really good at offense, but if you're the Hawks, that's your strength. The Hawks need to be the defensive team. That's the problem, is like the Hawks are a better defensive team, I think, than they are an offensive team.
Oh, for sure.
And they're going up against the best defense in the league. So right. It's like your terrible offense can't score. And your really good defense doesn't really matter because Indiana can't score anyway.
It isn't going to happen, but it would have been fun if we could have gotten a Brooklyn-Indiana matchup just to see what happens when Tyler Hansbrough and Reggie Evans are on the court together.
This is what it's like when worlds collide.
Yes. I think they would just put a ladder in the middle of the floor and it'd instantly become a ladder match.
Who's your Eastern Conference first round MVP pick? Let's talk about the stupidest concept I could possibly throw out.
Wow, that's a really awful question.
Yep.
I'm gonna go Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, I was going the same way.
Yeah. It's probably dumb to not pick LeBron, but I'll go Carmelo.
This seems like his shining moment. This is going to be exercises the demons.
I'm really hoping for some validation for him. I really hope that they can at least get to the second round, and I wouldn't mind them in the conference finals just because I think Melo deserves a little more respect than he's gotten. And I know he kind of acted like an ass for a while, but I really do enjoy his game a lot. And I'd like him to get a little support.
I think if you didn't have to deal with Twitter, I think you'd actually feel like Melo got a lot of respect. Because I think the most national media really loves him. And, of course, the New York media loves him.
That's true.
I think that most people love him. It's really just Twitter that's – and I contribute to this. Like, we're obsessed with efficiency, and he's not a hyper-efficient player. Which I was trying to explain this last night to some young people. Like, that doesn't mean – it's not a value judgment. Efficient isn't good or not. It's – you can be a good player that's not spectacularly efficient. It's right. Hard to be a good player that's – badly inefficient.
Right.
But you could be a good player that's not spectacularly efficient. So,
who is going to be I'll try to match your dumb question. Who's going to be the most disappointing player in the first round in the East?
Gosh, it's hard. I'm tempted to say Brook Lopez, but I think most people understand how good Joakim Noah is.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Paul George.
Ooh, I like that pick. I'm also going with Paul. I'm going Paul Pierce.
You know, I think that the thing with George has been slumping for a while, for a little bit here at the end. And I like his game a lot. I really appreciate where he's come from and where he's gotten to and his development. I like his upside. Good defender. I have no complaints about Paul George. It's just that one thing people really don't understand is Josh Smith can defend.
Very good. Very good defender.
I will be up there with anybody talking about. One of my favorite things in the NBA is that moment where Josh catches it in Atlanta and the crowd goes, no. Like, I think that's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
As bad as the Atlanta crowd is, the fans that do go screaming no when he catches it from 18 and he's open and he shoots it anyway. It's just, that's like such an NBA moment to me. That's just like, that's the NBA to me.
I would really love for him to knock down a big 18-footer in Atlanta as they yell no. And for him to, like, shush the crowd. Shush his own crowd. That would be spectacular.
I want to turn around and scream yes. That'd be even better.
Right.
Just like, yes! but yeah, I'll go with Paul George. I think that Smith can do some damage on him. I think that Deshaun Stevenson, oddly enough, is a pest. He just, bizarrely, I didn't think it was possible until the 2011 playoffs. And then I saw it and was like, what is happening?
Yeah, he's one of those very annoying players.
Yeah. So I think that there's a possibility. I did a little bit of a breakdown in our preview thing of how the Hawks have to do a better job when he comes off the pick because they're either playing back or ignoring him. momentarily, and he's able to hit. If you leave George, he's actually pretty good shooting behind the pick.
Yeah.
So they need to be careful of that. But if they ramp up the intensity and play a little bit better, I think that George could have a bad series. I don't think he'll have bad playoffs, but I think he'd have a bad series.
I gotta tell you, I'm very excited. The end of the season is always a little tough because you know the playoffs are right around the corner, and you want them to get there. And now that they're here, like, everything matters. There isn't a single moment in these games that won't matter, and I love that about the pressure that comes with it. I love that about the level of execution that has to show up for a team to be successful. And it's what we saw when LeBron went crazy against the Celtics in Game 6 last year. It's what we saw when Durant and Harden went nuts against the Spurs in the conference finals. And I'm just excited to see those moments and cover them. I think it's going to be great.
For me, it's that moment where it's a close game with like a minute 54 to play, and they've been battling back and forth, and one team's been ahead, but the other one keeps making runs, and the other team's brought it within two, and they're coming out of a timeout, and they bring the ball up floor, and like the crowd's in a frenzy, and it's nuts. And the side of the guy dribbling, setting the offense, and just the intensity. Those moments are what makes covering the NBA so much fun. I'm really excited for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Glad you're with us. Thanks for joining us throughout the season. We'll have your Western Conference playoff preview tomorrow.
And remember, Darko's a big bag of suck.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.